Welcome to the Belper Beer Club podcast. We're four intrepid beer explorers from Derbyshire, and we thought it was about time we put out a podcast. And here it is. My name's John.
My name's Sean.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Jamie.
In this episode, we have an interview with Chris Morris from Modest Brew, based in County Antrim, Northern Ireland. He talks extensively about the scene over there and what it's like to be a newcomer on Bruiser. Here at the Belper Beer Club, we've been championing breweries from Northern Ireland for quite a while. We previously shared Beer Hut and Boundary, and Sean, one of our members who has family in that part of the world, has sampled others such as Licarda, Bull House and Mourne Mountain. Tonight, Chris from Modest Brewery of County Antrim joins us. Modest is one of the latest breweries to join Bruiser and a rising star on the Northern Ireland scene. The brewery's minimal, even modest, branding certainly stands out, and I'm sure their beers will too. So, Chris, tell us about your journey so far.
Hi, everyone. My name is Chris Morris. I'm the founder and brewer at Modest Beer Brewing Company. So firstly, congratulations to you guys. I believe from our small chat that you guys have just gone international with your podcast. I'm talking to you from my home in Hollywood here, so not quite as glamorous, but sure, it hasn't rained today, so that's something. Modest Beer was founded and launched in November 2019. I don't have a commercial background in brewing, and so I suppose to go back a little bit further than that, just to give some context, I had been an accountant and tax advisor for the 12 years prior to starting Modest Beer. I always had a passion and an interest in science. In terms of A-levels, I'd done chemistry and physics, and for some unknown reason, left that behind me and decided to go down the pathway of business, and ended up doing a degree in accounting and finance, and onto that conveyor belt, and stayed there for the guts of 12 years. Almost at the start of that particular career, I met a guy who was my boss for a number of years, back when I was a fresh-faced graduate in sort of 2009. And he was a massive advocate for local craft beer. He was a camera member, and he really drummed it into me that there were lots of really special local breweries on the island of Ireland, and we need to be trying their beer, and sort of opened my eyes to the world of craft beer. And that's when I started the homebrew. Really, once I sort of had my eyes opened and went down that rabbit hole, I'm kind of one of these people that I suppose in for a penny, in for a pound. And when I get a hobby or an interest, it doesn't really tend to stay sort of surface level. And I was probably homebrewing within 6 months of that sort of awakening to craft beer.
What was that kind of kit that you were using at that particular point? Was it like an all-in-one brew system, or was it kind of like a Heath Robinson kind of free pot kind of setup?
The very first brew I made was, I think, probably the same as most people, one of those plastic bucket extract, all in very basic, add boiling water, that's really all you need to do. But that sort of got me thinking about, well, how is this made? This is clearly not how beer is made on a commercial level. Ended up probably within 6 months of doing that brew with a library of homebrew books and a grandfather, and that was me down the rabbit hole of all grain, and stayed there until 2013, and I moved to London then with work and my now wife. We are living in a one-bed apartment. There's absolutely no room to homebrew where we were living there. The kids stayed at home. The homebrewing stayed at home. I was there for a couple of years, but what did happen was fell in love with the craft beer scene on the mainland, totally different from what was available in Northern Ireland at the time.
So if you were in London at that point, what breweries were you kind of seeking out then? Because that's quite a vast scene there.
Yeah. I remember the Bermondsey Beer Mile and just being like, well, what is this? The Colonel, Partisan, Brew by Numbers.
Anspach and Hop Day?
Pardon?
Anspach and Hop Day?
Yes, exactly. But just seeing that scene, lots of breweries clustered together, industrial estates around the place with, people just bouncing between different breweries, having a really great time. And the scene in Northern Ireland just was not like that. And I was probably a bit naive to that and didn't understand why that was. So when I came back to Northern Ireland at the end of 2014, with a bit of a bounce in my step, thinking, look, there's a massive gap in the market here. The scene over on the mainland is huge. My wife and I sort of fell in love with that and found ourselves every weekend finding a craft beer bar, going visit a brewery. You just can't do that in Northern Ireland. Unfortunately, I kind of got my head around the reason for that when I got back to Northern Ireland. They are keg licensing laws that we have. It meant that they effectively couldn't sell direct to customers. They couldn't have tap rooms. They couldn't have web shops. And it was just a really, really difficult trading environment for them because of the way the licensing laws were set up. So then it was my thoughts went from, well, it's not really a gap in the market. There's a reason why nobody is doing this, because they can't. Yeah. And so I got back to homebrewing, and that was sort of late 2014. Absolutely no commercial intentions throughout any of this. But in 2018, a good friend of mine who lives over in Bristol, he's a graphic designer by trade, but he was opening a restaurant with some other business partners, and he wanted some branded beer for the launch night and to launch the restaurant with, if sort of that process went well. So to do that legally, I don't know, you may or may not have spoken to others on your podcast who have gone about the process of trying to set up a brewery from a garage or a building on a residential site. It's just as much red tape as it is for, a commercial brewing unit in terms of your alcohol wholesale license with HMRC, the local council, planning, all the rest of it. But I kind of said to him, look, if you want to do this properly and legally, this is the route and this is what I need to do. So it took a bit of time, about 6 months to get everything in place to do that. At this time, I had 2 30 liter setups, so I could brew 60 liters of beer. So I did that. I think it was probably 10 batches of beer, hand bottled all of them, put them on a pallet, and off they went to Bristol. And they went down well. And once they had disappeared, the next question was, well, can we do this again, please? And I sort of looked at the weekends and the hours of 10 batches of beer, all of the hand bottling, just thought, no, this is crazy. But it planted the seed of, well, we've got a garage here. It's registered legitimately as a premises that can brew beer. It just needs a bigger kit. And it took probably a year and a half to get from that point to November 2019 when Modest Beer launched commercially. To come up with a business plan, to source the kit, to get the finances together to go and get that kit. The point I talked about earlier about the licensing laws back in at the end of 2014, which were a big barrier to entry at that stage, that was still a problem then in 2019. But the light at the end of the tunnel for me, and why I went ahead with the brewery at that stage, was because there were discussions with our assembly here with regards to review of those licensing laws and the potential for a producer's license, which would be unique to breweries and hopefully allow them to sell their own product. So that was all legislation that was in motion and in conversation. And so I thought that I need to, if I want to act on this, I need to do it now so that I have a brand and a brewery in place and ready to go when the licensing laws change, rather than trying to have a standing start when that happens. The way it transpired actually is that our assembly collapsed and disappeared for the guts of 2-3 years. So that piece of legislation that I was hoping would be there for me, within 6 months of launch, was actually pushed until October last year.
I was over in Northern Ireland August of last year, and I was in Belfast, and I thought I'd go to check out Boundary Brewery and see if I can buy some beers directly from their tap room. But yeah, and I was coming from the UK, I was shocked to see that wasn't a thing. So, but I then read up on it and I kind of understood that, yeah, in October of that particular year, the law was changed, which may have made that possible.
Yes, so there was a lot of really good lobbying work done by the likes of Boundary, Matt Dick, who heads up there, and Willie Main, who's the MD at Bullhouse Brewing Company, to name a couple of people. But there was a lot of good lobbying work going on from Northern Irish brewers and support from publicans as well that were on this. There's probably publicans that are on both sides of the fence, those that want to protect what they have and the monopoly that they have, and those that want to encourage competition and support the local craft breweries. So that was all going on. The license that came through and was agreed is much better than it was, but I think it's also very restrictive, and because of that, we've not seen huge uptake in terms of breweries actually using that license. So what you can do now is with your producer's license, you can effectively open for 104 days per annum between the hours of I think it's 4 p.m. and 10 p.m. So you've got 6 hours,
right?
104 times a year, which boils down to Friday and Saturday between for 6 hours between 4 and 10. So you've got 12 hours a week. And I think the difficulty the breweries are seeing with that is, how can you invest in infrastructure and fitting out what essentially should be a tap room and employing staff based off of 12 hours a week? It's not enough time to trade, and it's not enough.
Mm.
It just doesn't go far enough, I think, is what has happened. Now, it does allow breweries to have a web shop and sell online. But a lot of breweries were doing that anyway. And the way things like tap rooms and the way things like web shops were working prior to this legislation was that basically supportive publicans that had a full liquor license were using that license to assist breweries. So any brewery that was operating a web shop prior to that legislation would have had an agreement with a local off sales or pub, and they would have sold their beer online. But ultimately, it's using the back end of that is the license that the publican holds. And depending on the relationship, it might have been for free, it might have been for a license fee. But broadly, everybody had a web shop prior to that in some shape or form. And tap rooms could be done, but it was a process of using what's called an occasional license. So a publican that has a full liquor license has the opportunity, I think, to use 12 licenses per annum for an occasional event, which has a lot of red tape, stipulation, and requires you to go to court and get it approved. But a lot of breweries were able to do this maybe once a month with, again, a relationship with a local publican that was willing to support and help you. So the likes of Boundary or Bullhouse would have maybe had a monthly or bi-monthly tap room. It's never guaranteed because you have to go to court every time and you can be refused. So there's
a lot of hoops to jump through just to
be
normal.
I think it's quite remarkable though, because like you mentioned a few of the breweries that have, you know, come to our attention, and obviously there must be more locally that we're not aware of. But like, there's some pretty top-notch breweries, including yourself. There's the likes of Boundaries, Bullhouse. We've had mentioned Beer Hut before. Lacada are getting a name for themselves now, and we knew about them before. So is that because of that change, or is it just because the scene itself has kind of come alive in Northern Ireland?
I think I think those breweries are getting a lot of acknowledgement on the mainland, probably because they're actually forced to export a lot of their beer. And I say export, I mean outside of Northern Ireland.
Right. Okay.
I know from the get-go, back 2014, 2015, when the likes of Boundary would have been starting up, they started on a 400-liter brew kit, and they were exporting 80% of their beer very quickly.
Wow.
Which is just madness. So, and for a couple of the, so Boundary and Bullhouse, currently now they both have tap rooms or satellite bars slash tap. Boundary's is more of a tap room. It's right on site. Bullhouse's is slightly separated from their brewery. But what they've done is go and acquire a full bar license, which in Northern Ireland is pricey because we have the surrender principle here. So we have a finite amount of liquor licenses available. So there's around 2,000 licenses currently in the market, but there hasn't been a new license for over 100 years. What you have to do is wait for another pub or supermarket or off sales to close. You can acquire that license.
Oh, Jesus.
So, a pub has closed somewhere, and luckily Boundary and Bullhouse have been able to get their hands on those licenses, but because there's a finite amount, they're expensive. It can be up to six figures to buy one of these things. So they have those now, which is fantastic. But I've lost my train of thought now. There was a point to this story. But that's the route that those guys have gone
down.
And that has changed the scene in itself. Like, you can see the demand for that, and just the space where it's an area where there's nothing like it. And Boundary and Bullhouse are both within half a mile of each other, and it's the community's just been crying out for a space where people from all walks of life are welcome. They've got a huge choice in terms of beverages and food, and their dogs are welcome, their kids are welcome, and it's just a really, really nice environment, and they're doing really well because of that. It's just a shame that wasn't there 10 years ago, because it should have been. Certainly the beer and the breweries and the people behind those were there, and they were trying to make that happen.
Yeah.
And those guys have almost, I suppose, paved the way for people like me as well. So I'll always have a lot of respect and look up to those guys, and we'll continue to push on to hopefully move the licensing laws to where they need to be. I think as much as that license coming in last year was great, there's an ongoing review into the wider licensing laws at the minute. So the University of Stirling has been appointed to undertake that work, and they're doing that at the minute. So so little of the beer is being sold in Belfast. It's a whole myriad of reasons that have just, it's the perfect storm almost, because over 90% of the ties in this country are tied to one of the multinational macros. So the Heinekens, the Diageos of the world, contractually, either through making loans to the publicans in terms of fitting out cold stores, building bars, or even mortgage built into the mortgage on the premises. So there's a contractual requirement to put a certain volume of beers across the taps, and it sort of handcuffs the publican really as to what they can serve. So there's very few free taps in Greater Belfast, and all of the breweries are competing for those, unfortunately. So I think those publicans do a really good job of rotating everybody in and out, but in terms of getting permanent lines and forecasts and reliable sales through a certain point, it's still difficult. In draft, I sell more to GB in terms of keg than I do in Northern Ireland. And
I was going to ask about that. Actually, I mean, are you sort of involved in all the commercial, like Ebria and people like that, in terms of moving it into the UK? Is that kind of open to you guys?
Yes, Ebria. We have definitely set aside certain lines of stock, and that's been going quite well actually. Like the way the market here is probably flip reverse to what it may be for breweries, and there's very, very, very little bars that will actually, I can count maybe three or four bars really that will for cask beer. So there's not really any demand for cask at all.
You just got to one of our questions there. We were going to ask about cask and keg, but you kind of half answered it. In fact, there's not a lot of cask.
No, there's really not. There's probably two breweries here that would focus on bottle conditioned beer and cask, but I suspect that their split between the bottle conditioned beer and cask is very heavily swayed to the small pack. We have done the occasional beer and cask for specific events, for example, but it's not something that's really regularly part of our production or packaging. So it really is predominantly keg and can, and we're I think we're about 75% can and 25% keg, which oddly, starting the brewery in November 2019, about, you know, 5 months before the first lockdown happened,
a lot
of breweries found themselves caught with a lot of keg and cask stock and absolutely no route to market for it. We were the opposite, that we started completely in can because the draft market over here is so tied. There's no real demand for cask. So small pack is where everything was going. And that's actually the off sales and web shop side of things kind of took off at that point. So I don't know if that did us well. I don't really have anything to compare it to, but it certainly didn't leave us in the place of a lot of stock that we couldn't move. And
yeah, we've heard some awful that stories panic about people having to throw a lot of, you know, expensive stock away, and it's tragic as beer lovers. You know, that's absolutely tragic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had a chat with Noah from Chapter, who are based near Runcorn, and he's like a massive cask fan, and that's really where he wants to be. And he was talking about how before the pandemic, they'd made a business decision to go, you know, not all in on cask, but really focus on that market. And then, of course, pandemic happened. They managed to kind of figure out a way of getting stuff into cans and survived through that. And like similarly, like locally here, we've got Pentridge, who didn't do any cans. They were really cask focused and just chose to go into cans just before the pandemic. So it was a lucky choice for them. But sounds like you were saved, I guess, by that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it probably the first 10 or 15 minutes here probably sound like I'm complaining about the restrictions that we have here. But perversely, it's probably one of the things that actually helped given the circumstances at the time. However, looking back and looking forward also, I think it's always the aspiration to grow the keg. And it has grown, you know, only probably a quarter of what we do now, but as long as that keeps creeping up, that's great for me. We're working really hard with the publicans that are there with the ability contractually to take the beer. And I think hopefully as more and more bars come out of those ties and hopefully see where the market is and what consumers want, that they're willing to forgo the money that's being thrown at them to step back into another contractual arrangement and leave some of the taps independent and free and give the breweries here a chance. Certainly the likes of Bullhouse and Boundary having their own bar license and those guys, that they're stepping up and supporting all of the local breweries. But it'll be great if this review finishes and there's a bit of a change to how the licenses are working in this country at the minute. But it's, as I say, there's a lot of people with a lot of power and vested interests. So it's a difficult one to overcome.
It could be really exciting times though, couldn't it? You know, if it all changes and it becomes more similar to UK, it could be really exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, people like yourselves could be right at the start of that kind of scene happening. That'd be pretty exciting, I think. Okay, Chris, I'm really keen to understand where you got the name Modest from. I mean, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking you're a big fan of Johnny Marr, maybe like Modest Mouse or something like that, or you're just playing down in terms of how good your beer is. Where did the name come from?
I think it put a nice wrapper around all of the discussions we were having about the beer, the branding, or how we were going to talk about the beer through that initial phase before launch.
Yeah.
I think it was at a time when the craft beer shelves were incredibly busy. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of loud artwork out there.
Mm-hmm.
And our decision was to kind of pare back to simplicity. And I suppose the concept being, if simplicity is done really well, it can be just as striking. And that was really one of the cornerstones of how we saw the brand and the cans looking on the shelf. In terms of how I wanted to brew, again, simplicity. Everything will be in there for a reason and will be thought through. And I think as Northern Irish people as well, we tend to be reasonably modest in that we don't shout too loudly about what we're doing and kind of just get on with it.
Yeah.
Try and do a good job and let the product or whatever it is that you're doing speak for itself. So there was all of this going on in the discussion phase. And I think Modest Beer just coined everything that we were trying to do in terms of brand, in terms of the beer, in terms of where the beer is coming from and the sort of community behind it. So it just put a nice wrapper around it and does exactly what it says on the tin, hopefully. As a brewery, we're not really trying to revolutionize or completely change the craft beer movement. What we're just trying to do is add to it with a brand that is dependable and joyous and honest, and that's really it.
Yeah. Well, certainly the artwork does stand out, because normally before we have a beer night, we would tease the label, the can art of the beer that we're drinking, the beers that we're drinking. And John, you did that early in the week.
Yeah, I tried really hard because it is so distinctive. I'm sure you saw the tweets, and like somebody got it very quickly. And normally it takes like two or three goes.
Well, even when you sent us a WhatsApp message say the tease is up, I looked at it and I went, that was like Modest Brewery. And then you went on the web shop, because we were watching Belper Town, the local football team, playing. And you went and looked on the website and you went, yeah, I think it is. I think it is Modest.
Yeah. But I think it did help because of you just going on to Bruiser. I think we'd all, whenever a new brewery comes on Bruiser, it perks my interest a little bit.
Mm.
And then so I checked out Modest on Bruiser and seen the can out there. And then as soon as you showed me the picture, I said, I think that's Modest. I was like, yeah.
Mm. Also, it's a familiar theme with two of the other breweries that we've had on the podcast. So Simple Things from Glasgow and Chapter, who we mentioned before, sound like they have a very similar philosophy for you, in that kind of simplicity, really just kind of making really good beer and enjoying it. And so, I mean, that definitely chimes with a lot of people. Is that something that you're finding people are really kind of getting on with? Is it helping and with what you're doing?
I think what you guys have just said is really reassuring, because that's exactly what we want to happen. You've seen it on Bruiser. You've seen the corner of it on a snip of a picture, and you can recognize it from that. And I think that's paramount in such a competitive market. It's busy. And if you can instantly recognize a product as, that's Modest Beer, I can see it. I saw that in Bruiser. I fancy trying that today. I see it on the shelf. Yeah. And that is half the battle, I think, is getting lifted off the shelf. Because if you don't, it doesn't matter what's inside the can effectively, because nobody's going to try the product. So, I think for me and myself as a consumer, it always goes beyond just the physical product. It's, well, what is the brand about, and what do they want to achieve? The product itself, the beer, it's a vehicle, but where are they going with it, and what do they believe in? And it's more connecting with that broader picture that is important. And so That's what I'm trying to do with Modest Beer as well, is just try and communicate what it is that we're about so that people can hopefully listen and relate to it. And obviously it's about the beer and enjoy the beer, but obviously the wider picture as well.
Well, while you're talking about the beer, we are actually drinking one of your beers right now. It sounds like a nice segue to start talking about it. So we've got the Bruce New Zealand Pale Ale. I think it's called Kick Off Your Boots and Stick Your Feet Up. Certainly what I'm getting for it is the floral notes on this is really up front, and it kind of stands out from all the different hazy pales that I'm drinking. It's certainly is a different kind of offers something different to me. What do you guys think?
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about the hops before, and there's one particular, the Bruce itself, but it's also got Citra, Matuka, and one of our kind of common favourites, Nelson Sauvin. So it's a nice mix, fairly complex mix, but really nice and fruity as well.
Yeah, we spotted off the bat that it's got the Nelson in there, which is like a go-to at the moment. But yeah, just want to explain what the Bruce is all about.
So the Bruce, the beer itself is named after or alongside of the hop blend, which is a hop blend that is produced by Freestyle Hops in Sunrise Valley. It is named after a guy called Bruce Eggers, who was a hop farmer there for 50 years, and him and his wife. And he had retired, and as a token of appreciation, they named this hop blend after him. So it's a blend of Nelson Sauvin, Motueka, and Pacifica and Pacific Jade. So there's four different New Zealand hops in that blend. Now, to what proportion, we don't really have visibility of, and it can change from, the hops themselves will change from crop year to crop year, and the blend itself may change from crop year to crop year as well. So it's another one of those that is a difficult one to gauge quite what you're going to get in terms of when you move from one crop year to the next. It's obviously difficult enough when you've got one varietal, but when you've got four in there that are blended together, it can be tricky to try and recreate the same beer. So with this this beer, it's a different release every year. In terms of the crop year, the beer will always perform differently, and we'll do our sensory analysis on the crop when it arrives in, and based on how we think that and until you've put it in the beer, you really, I guess, you don't know exactly how it'll perform. But this particular year was supplemented with a little bit of Nelson and Motueka, because to me, it's sort of those two hop varietals were less present in the mix, and you were getting a little bit more of the Pacifica and the Pacific Jade. So that's the lineage to German hops. You're getting, as you say, the floral and the spiciness, and less of the Nelson and less of the Motueka, and that's kind of why I decided to support, I guess, the Bruce blend with those two, to try and bring those two varieties to the forefront. But it's just, it's lots of, to me, grapefruit and lemon lime. It's that sort of sharp citrusy notes, and then again the floral and spiciness.
Whether it's something that I haven't noticed before, but I didn't know that you could buy blends of hops.
I'm
used to seeing the hops, you know, on their own, but I've never seen, you know, I mean, I brew beer myself, and I've never seen a place where I can buy I imagine it's coming in pellet form, or is it liquid, whatever it is, where they kind of.
It's T90s, T90 pellets.
So, I didn't even know that was a thing.
I mean, you've hit a couple of things great there. You know, one is you've tuned it to what you think it should be, and that's amazing, right? Because a lot of people would just use it as it came, so that's amazing in its own right. But also, you know, like Sean said earlier, this has got something that a lot of hazy pales don't have. You know, I mean, it's definitely got a more spicy, more floral. So, you know, certainly hit the nail on the head. And we've spoken to a couple of breweries, and the source of the hops is becoming more and more kind of important, which is what you're showcasing here. You know, you've gone to New Zealand and got some specific hops that you're really into. I mean, how are you seeing that at the moment? Are people trying to find more and more exotic hops?
For us as a brewery, it's actually, I think when I started this journey and Modest Beer launched back in November 2019, I was still working full time at that point, and I was doing this on the side, evenings, weekends, every other waking hour essentially. But the business was supported by a wage and was essentially a passion project at that point, and that afforded me the ability to be quick and nimble and try out all of these varieties as soon as they come in the market and are available. You can pop them into a beer, the risk is negligible. Mm-hmm. In terms of the cost, because you're not relying on that beer going to package and going out into the market, you can take more risks and be more nimble, I think, is the point I'm trying to make. In March of 2022, I left my job and took on Modest Beer full time. So it was the guts of 18 months, close to 2 years of building the brewery, mm-hmm. working full time, to a point where we moved from the unit in Hollywood, which was essentially a converted double garage, very small unit. We had a Brix 300 brewing kit, which can produce with a liquor back, who produced 600 liters of wort, and had four 650 liter fermenters, and that was it. There was no more space at all. So at that point in time, we moved to a unit in Randallstown, which is where we are now. We share that unit with another brewery, our brewery, which is a sister company to Getter Brewed, the homebrew and microbrewery supply business. As part of that move, I was able to invest in a new 26 hectoliter tank. So we have the 26 hect and then the four 650 liter tanks. And that is essentially what I'm brewing on now. It gives us sort of about 4,000 liters of fermentation capacity. It's about 8,000 liters of beer per month. So it's been more about a process of consolidation, I would say, over the last year, of the core beers that we're offering and the seasonal steady beers that will be in production multiple times per year, and not paring back, but just being quite selective about what our special releases are going to look like, mm-hmm. and being more thoughtful about those, in that we can't necessarily be as reactive or as quick off the mark, say, as it could have been back in November 2019. But that doesn't, I mean, if there's a product there that's exciting and there's a lot of noise about it, generally that's because it's a good product, it's making delicious beer, consumers are excited about it, and therefore we as brewers are obviously excited about that as well. So I think the Bruce is one of those examples. This was a hop blend that came through to Getter Brewed in a really small amount. So actually the larger breweries were probably prohibited just because of the volume that was available in Northern Ireland. This came in, I think the first crop year we got was 2018. And so that would have been available in sort of 2019, which we got in November 19. So this beer was released quite early. And I would say we were probably one of the first, certainly Northern Irish breweries, to use it in a beer, purely by virtue of one, relationship with Getter Brewed, but two, our size. Yeah. We don't necessarily need a huge amount of hops to make a full batch of beer. So that's how we got our hands on this particular varietal.
Yeah, it's interesting. In fact, the last podcast we did, we were talking with Jamie, who works with Coolhead, the Finnish brewery. And he was talking about some very specialist hops that they got hold of, including one called Anchovy, which by pure coincidence, I'd just had a can of a beer from Track. And it is very different. And you see the name Anchovy and you think, what the hell's that? So there are these things coming out. And he was like talking about how they got hold of some of that. So are those sort of things arriving on your lap and you getting the chance to try them? Is that where it's going with it?
Sure. So I think what I've seen from a lot of the hop providers, certainly in the last year, is a real push towards the flowable hop products, the likes of Spectrum, Incognito. We've worked with some, I'm trying to remember the name now of the flowable hop product that we used from Hopsteiner very recently. In one of our beers, we brewed a collaboration beer with Bullhouse Brewing Company. It was a hoppy table beer, but we used the flowable hop product from Hopsteiner. It's a competitor to the Incognito product. So definitely in terms of working with new products, certainly those have been really interesting in terms of how they perform in the brew house, where best to use them in the process, because they come with advice, I guess, as to how best they're used. But as brewers, we like to get creative with these things and maybe them a little bit outside of the box. So things like the flowable hop products, we're finding actually, rather than one, number one, they're an absolute mess to work with. So they're like working with treacle, difficult to get the flow, but also once they're inside your whirlpool or stainless steel vessel, they're a nightmare to get out as well. So
all right,
rather than having a mess to clean up with. And also I suppose the worry is that you're leaving behind all of those lovely hop oils that you've paid so much money to acquire. You want them in the beer, and if they're being left inside the vessel, it's always a little bit of a worry. So we've been playing around with putting some of those directly into the fermenter.
Okay, interesting. Yeah,
knocking out the first maybe 10% of the batch warm through the heat exchanger, but not having the counterflow switched on, so it's coming through into the fermenter still at sort of 75 degrees, and adding it directly in there, trying not to get any losses in terms of product, to get it all into the tank, into the FE, rather than leaving some of that behind in the vessel. And things like that are working quite nicely. And those are the sorts of things that we've been playing around with alongside the stalwarts of the T90s and the cryo hops. Variety wise, probably haven't experimented as much as I would have, certainly in 2019, 2020, consolidating around the hops that are important to the beers that we make. And there's probably, you know, five or six of those that we're using fairly frequently in different ways. And then again, it's those sort of one-off specials and exciting beers to keep you guys interested in what we're doing and how we're innovating. That's when we look to, I suppose, what's available.
Including a green hopped beer, I noticed that you'd just done. What was that? I'm sad to say I didn't manage to get hold of any. It's only just come out, but we love a good green hop beer here.
Yeah, so that came about. There is a brewery here in Northern Ireland called Ards Brewing Company, and it's run by a chap called Charles Ballantyne. And Charles has six or seven individuals around Northern Ireland that have grow sites that grow and have been growing Fuggles hops for him.
Oh, wow.
I think for the last 7 or 8 years. So each year they will harvest and he will make a fresh hop or green hop beer with those hops within sort of 24 hours of harvest. This year, Charles had a bout of COVID and wasn't well, and it coincided with the time when these hops were going to be harvested. So I got a panicked phone call a few days before harvest, because I have quite a good relationship with Charles. He's been very helpful for me. He's one of the guys that I mentioned earlier that are making really good quality traditional bottle conditioned and cask beer in Northern Ireland. Few and far between, but absolutely nailing it. And he phoned me, he said, look, I'm not going to be able to brew with these, but they're going to be harvested. It'd be an absolute sin to see them go to waste. Have you anything you could do with them? So I squeezed them into the brew schedule and came up with a recipe with Charles for these. And it actually, sharing a unit with the guys at our brewery and Getter Brew, they had recently engaged Matthew Curtis, the
The beer writer.
Beer writer.
Yeah.
To write an article on Oktoberfest and fresh hop beers and local freshly harvested hops, and just the interaction of what I suppose it was thought provoking in terms of what should we really be focusing on. And we've got so much available to us on our doorstep. Are we sort of looking across to Germany and seeing what they've got over there and trying to live the Oktoberfest that they have over here, when really actually we've got our own culture, we've got all these beautiful ingredients, all of these great beers and festivals are happening all around us, shining a bit of a light on that. So Getter Brew got behind the beer as well, and they provided some of the malt, the Plumage Archer Heritage grain, which is the backbone of the beer.
Okay.
We've called it a harvest beer, but I think to describe it, it's probably, we had one of the beer bloggers in Northern Ireland, Quair Swally is the name he goes by, describe it as somewhere along the lines of an English pale, a landlord type of,
okay.
That was his comparison. It's really interesting working with fresh hops. You need an absolute ton of them is the first thing.
Yeah.
They're wet. There's a lot of moisture in there. They're nowhere near as condensed. They're obviously not dried down. They're not the same potency as the T90s or cryo hops would be. So,
and you get less yield out of it as well, don't you?
Yeah. There's two body bags of that's the sort of the size of these things going into the whirlpool, and it's not a big whirlpool. Really interesting in terms of, number one, how to work with them, and Charles was great with that. He's been brewing beers with those annually for a number of years. Just in terms of hopping rate and process, I think it's a lot different from how I would work with T90, so it was great to have his support with that. The beer has come out so it's something I'm really proud of, because it's not a style of beer that we would brew typically. It's not a raw ingredient that we would work with typically. And so with that always comes a little bit of trepidation in that, is this beer going to be something that our fans are going to expect from us? And secondly, can we pull it off? Because we haven't really done it before, albeit we have that support from Charles remotely, from his sickbed, to kind of guide us through his suggestion. So I'm really, really happy with how it came out, quite proud of it. And it's one of those beers we've actually put in the cask, because Charles is so it just would have been remiss not to put some of that beer in the cask, because it does it goes there every year, and that's where it needs to be. It's one of those beers that performs perfectly in cask, I think. So there's cask of that beer in the brewery, and I can't wait to get that pouring. He has a couple of events earmarked where that's going to be poured, and at the same time there's plenty of cans available as well. So it was one of those beers where I had a lot of trepidation about it, because fear of the unknown, right? But ultimately very, very happy with how it's turned out, and the feedback's been great so far. So we're proud of it.
Sounds amazing.
I hear you talk a lot of about we during that conversation, but I'm led to believe that Modest Beer is just one person, and that's yourself. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the royal we, I think. I fall into this trap of saying we. I can't do this without the help of a lot of people. So I get a lot of support from Studio B in Bristol, who are completely behind the brand there, the graphic design guys that I mentioned to you. It's an old school friend, Kyle, and Ben, a graphic designer that works with him. Massive support and help to Modest Beer. They do all of the artwork, and could not be anywhere close to where we are today without those guys.
Yeah.
And then sharing the unit with Getter Brewed and our brewery as well means that there's always multiple hands on deck. So it's allowed us to, and I say us as in not the royal us, myself, Modest Beer, and our brewery and their staff to invest in a canning line first and foremost. We were able to split that 50-50 because we sat down and looked at the cost of mobile canning for both of us and the volume of cans we'd be putting through a canning line together cumulatively. And it just made complete sense to get a canning line between us. So we've done that. So together we'll package both Modest Beer and our brewery. So I'll be at one end of the canning line always, and they'll have somebody at the other end helping me. There's always somebody in the brewery. So even days when I'm not there, I'm off doing one of the many other things that it takes to run a brewery. There'll be someone there for small things that need done and things that need attention paid to. So I think, yeah, it's worked really well in that I've been able to survive as a bit of a lone wolf because of that relationship until now. I think if it was just me and a unit on my own, I couldn't get by just myself. There would be definitely a need for at least another pair of hands. So it is me, but I say we collectively. There's a team of people that don't necessarily work for or are employed directly by Modest Beer, but there's certainly plenty of people that have given their blood, sweat, and tears to the brewery and the cause. So,
well, I'm expecting you and your team to be really, really busy over the coming months, having just now, as we kind of talked about, kind of joined the kind of Bruiser network. What's your expectations with that? Because, you know, are you able to keep up with demand? What's your feeling about the whole kind of scenario?
So I originally had a conversation with Ollie probably close to 2 years ago. It was there and reasonably established, but it was still very, very early days. And we were pretty much there in terms of launching at that stage, and I got cold feet because I wasn't sure whether we could keep up with the... My concern was the consumer. From talking to Ollie and just being a beer fan myself, I think people don't really like duplicates in boxes. If you can get, and I don't know, I'm open to conversation on that. You guys maybe subscribe to Bruiser and
would have
an opinion on if a brewery has the asterisk of may contain duplicates, will you by default skim over that brewery and think, no, I don't, I want unique beers every time? My concern was that we're not going to get any traction if we can't have the appropriate number of unique beers every month. The scale and size we were operating at then and the volume of beer we were making, I wasn't confident that we could do that, and we would by default have to put duplicates into the box, and it would just probably do it damage in terms of actual traction and getting boxes into people's hands. So it's taken till now really to get that confidence and scale up over the last year and a half and get to a place where I feel like we'll have consistent supply of enough beers to put variety in the boxes consistently. And so in terms of expectation, we're a small brand in Northern Ireland with relatively little market awareness probably in the mainland. So number one, I think it gives us visibility there, which is great. I think it's a talking point in terms of relationships with distributors and awareness with customers now. I think you guys as Bruiser followers or subscribers will have seen it posted on social media. So hopefully that counts for something. And I think there'll be a portion of the Bruiser subscribers that want to try something new. And so will hopefully give us a shot purely based on the fact that we haven't heard of them or they're somewhat new. Really, ultimately, I think it's another wholesale revenue stream for a brewery in that that's kind of the way the costing works out eventually. It's not the same as, I suppose, selling through your own web shop. Bruiser will have their own set fee per box, which is the £38. The brewery provides goods to the value of that to make sure that the consumer is getting good value, and it's all agreed with Ollie and the team.
Yeah.
And then Bruiser take their margin and pay out X to the brewery. And I suppose the way that kind of works out is roughly around what you would wholesale your beer for to your distributor. So it's another wholesale revenue stream is how I'm looking at it. It's a good opportunity to get our beer in front of craft beer fans on the mainland and further afield, and also get some marketing behind us with Ollie and the team and Bruiser. So I'm excited about it. I hope it goes well. It's a tricky time to launch, and I'm not really sure if it's a good or a bad time, because you know, you're going into that Christmas period where people are stocking up for, there's a lot of special releases around Christmas. There's Bruiser have obviously, they've got their own special six pack, the collaboration that they've done. There's lots of breweries coming up with barrel projects and Christmas and winter releases. So it's a competitive time. So I don't know whether it'll be quiet and maybe pick up in the new year, or because it's Christmas, people are sort of in that consumer mode and we'll pick it up. I don't really know how it's going to go. So I don't really have any expectations, I think, is probably, I'm just delighted that we're now online and visible, and we'll see how it goes, I think, is really my approach to it.
That's really good.
Yeah, well, we all noticed you.
So yeah, definitely.
Positive. Yeah, and I think not only did we notice you, but I mean, it was because at the time we didn't know John had these beers coming in. So, I think it's always exciting when a new brewery comes onto Bruiser, but it's doubly so when it's a new brewery that you've not come across before. So imagine that, you know, that you coming onto Bruiser would have meant a lot of people jumping onto Untappd or something to kind of just to check you out because of like I say, not necessarily being as aware of this and you know, a new brewery from Northern Ireland, I think, is always going to pique a bit of interest. Definitely good for me. I'll be putting a box in the new year, I think.
So a couple of listener questions here. First one from Michael Box is, if it came to the crunch, cask or keg?
We already know the answer to that, sure.
Yeah, look, I do love cask beer. We just don't produce it purely because the culture and the market isn't here in Northern Ireland for it. But I guess it has to be keg for me, I think. It is that probably familiarity and recency bias. I think if I spent, you know, a long weekend over in the mainland, I'd be giving you a different answer because you get to try that at its finest and really enjoy it. And I make a point every time I'm over in the mainland, that's the first thing I will go for. Or in a bar in Northern Ireland, I live in Hollywood and we have a pub here called the Dirty Duck. It is a camera bar. And it has three hand pumps, and it's one of the few and far between bars that do. But anytime I'm down there, I'm drinking cask, and that's it. The rest of the bar is completely tied, to be fair, in that it doesn't have a keg offering, and it doesn't have even can or bottle offerings worth talking about. But it'll always have something local and really delicious on cask. So if I'm sitting in the Dirty Duck, or I'm sitting in one of the bars around Belfast that serve cask, it'll be cask. But by default, most of the other time it's keg. So it's a wishy-washy answer, but I think it's keg just by purely by the way that the market is over here and what you're kind of forced to drink in a lot of the keg, places you are.
You wish it could be cask.
Can I jump in Jamie's question?
Yeah, Jamie always likes to add an extra question. Here
well,
he goes.
I'm interested, but so given what you've said so far, obviously, you know, there's some challenges around what you can drink in Northern Ireland, what you can find in Northern Ireland. So you've got a pass onto the mainland for a weekend. You can go anywhere you want. what city are you going to and what tap rooms are you visiting?
Oh, man. That's a... Asking somebody that has described themselves as somebody that likes to go down the rabbit hole of hobbies, when I approach these sort of questions, I'm going to have to get a list and a page for each and every city. I'm going to have to write down the bars. I'm going to have to plan this thing out. But straight off the top of my head, I say either London or Manchester. London because I used to live there. And there's lots of places. I just haven't been back, and there's lots of places I'd love to go and see and see how they come on and revisit and see how it's moved on. But also we got our canning line from a crowd, Microcan are the guys that built the machine. It was actually bought secondhand, but they refurbished it. They're over in Bolton. So we went over back and forth a couple of times to see the line and get some training and whatnot before we bought it. And we went back via Manchester both times and called into a few of the spots around there. And it's just unbelievable. So again, it's probably that recency bias thing. We've had the line for over a year now, but I had such a good time when I was over there. The beers were phenomenal.
Yeah, Manchester's pretty good.
Yeah. Any particular places in Manchester? Because, you know, we had quite an infamous weekend about 4 years ago, pre-pandemic in Manchester. Won't go on about it too much, but there were some real highlights there. Just interested to see what you found.
We were somewhat limited for time just because of our flight and our schedule, but we went straight for... What we wanted to do was go and visit the brewery tap rooms. And so Track had just moved from their old unit to their new unit. And SureShot had set up in the old Track unit, but we had jumped on, oblivious to this, we had jumped on the Google Maps as we were walking around, and we just followed it to where Track should have been, and were met by James Campbell at the front door. Like confused.
The guy from Campbell.
He's now doing his own thing with SureShot, and was somewhat confused. And then we sort of, the guy I was with was like, we're looking for the Track tap rooms. Like, probably don't say that to him because he's just opened a brewery that isn't Track. But they hadn't opened the tap room yet, but he said, look, we don't have a tap room, but Track's just that way, but come back in September. I think we were there a couple of months prior, and they were just about to take the unit next door. So we went there and we went to Cloudwater right across the way, and we went to the Indian sort of street food vegan Bundabus. Yeah, excellent. Sorry, place. I was having my mind back there for some food as well, and then we got back to the airport. So it was pretty short and sharp, but pretty good. The quality was
If you ever make it back 100%. Again, make a pilgrimage to the Marble Arch if you can find it on, I think it's, is it Runcorn Road or something. We found it eventually, and it's an incredible pub, and it's the Marble Brewery's tap room as well. So definitely recommend that. Yeah,
that's a nice loop back. I think James was at Marble before he went to Cloudwater before he started SureShot back in the day as well. Interesting. We could have spent the
good question
the whole week there.
Right, one more list of question, we.
Yep. So just to look it up. And it is, who did the crazy animation on your website homepage? And that's from Sue.
This was Studio B. So
that's the rolling cans, isn't it?
Mesmeric, I would call it.
They're excellent. Any new ideas or things that they're working on, they'll work with Modest Beer as sort of the guinea pig to get things right, which is great, obviously, for me and for them in terms of a learning experience. So they were keen to, firstly, with Modest Beer, they wanted to get into more small pack and work with, you know, sort of fast moving consumer goods. So that was, Modest Beer gave them a little case study to put together to put out the market. And same, I think, with these sort of animations, that it's something they want to get their skill set together for other clients. And so they're fantastic. And actually, we're, in terms of social media, I was just griping about this the other day. If you post a a picture or an image to your post to your story on Instagram, nobody sees it anymore. But actually with these animations and a bit of movement, it's amazing how much more, whatever way that black box of an algorithm works, you know, you're getting 10 times more people actually seeing the thing, and 50% of those people don't follow you already. So you pick up a little bit more in terms of a wider audience as well. So I don't know if that was ever the intention behind doing those. I think it was probably, it's just a byproduct that happens to be a real positive. So yeah, Studio B, Kyle and Ben are the guys behind that. I can't take any credit for that one.
Well, it looks good from what I've seen.
Yeah. Cool. Over to Paul then. You've got some quickfire questions.
With the quickfire round. So as we said, it could be slow fire, hopefully it'll be quickfire. biggest influence on the brewery?
I have I'm not sure how to answer this one. I think the best answer is Noble Hollywood, which is a restaurant that my brother opened in 2016 with his business partner. And I say that because I'm not sure if that didn't happen, whether Modest Beer would have come to fruition as well. So my brother, slightly different background than me in terms of how I got into beer. He did work in, he gave his blood, sweat and tears in the commercial kitchen for 8 or 9 years before he decided to step in and do his own thing. He's a chef and his business partner's front of house. And they opened this restaurant in Hollywood, very small, 30-seater, very, very risky, and made an absolute success of it. And I remember sitting down, you know, a couple of years after the restaurant had taken off, having a pint with my brother and having a conversation just about all of the things that were on my mind, talking about, you know, the garage, the beer, where it could go. And he was just saying, look, back yourself. If you're going to place a bet on anybody in life or anything, put it on yourself. And it just stuck with me. And that, watching that happen, hearing those words, I think it gave me the, it gave me the confidence to go ahead and give it a rattle. And therefore, I feel like that's probably one of the biggest influences, purely because I'm not sure it would have happened without.
That's a great answer.
That's a heartwarming,
lovely answer.
Yeah, it's the truth.
The obvious question is, does he serve your beer?
He does. So I was griping about permanent tap lines in Northern Ireland. I certainly have one there.
Okay. That's good to know. Okay, the next one is, what's the best beer by your brewery?
Yeah, another really difficult question.
I mean, okay, you know,
don't be too modest about this one.
Yeah, right. You know you're modest, but right now, what are you liking on your brewery?
So I'm really focused on hoppy, hazy beer and lager. If you were to draw sort of an umbrella over the majority of the beers that I make, that's what it is. There's lots of other different styles of beer. There's lots of variety, but ultimately in terms of volume and what we brew day to day, that's mostly what it is. The very, very first beer that we released is still our flagship beer, still the beer that we sell the most of, and it's our New England Pale Ale, Cloudy Yet Full of Sunshine. It's 4.2%, designed to be one of those beers that is totally accessible to the new craft beer drinker, somebody that's maybe not overly au fait. I think the market in Northern Ireland at the time when I was starting, and arguably still, is quite young and has a lot of way to mature. So it had an eye to the consumer base that we were putting the beers out to. But equally, it was one of those beers that we wanted to be the fridge filler, the go-to type of beer for the craft beer connoisseur. You're going in to pick up your what's new by X, Y, and Z, what's exciting, lots of different styles of beer, and I'll grab a few of those for the fridge because I know I'll be in the mood for that beer as well. So for me, that probably is our best beer. I think it's versatile. I think it's great in the pub. It's been on cask, and and I really liked it on cask as well. But ultimately, it's been around for a long time, and I think as much as brewing new and exciting things is important and exciting as a brewer, consistency and quality and brewing the same beer over and over, but with little tweaks here and there just to get that extra 1 or 2% each time you brew it. This beer has had so many repetitions of that it's just, it's probably, yeah, just through the years. I'd love to have a fresh can from 2019 to try it side by side, but they won't be a million miles apart, but I would hope that the beer that we're making today is certainly better and more consistent. So that's the beer that I would say.
Brilliant.
I love that answer. Most people wouldn't go for a session beer, but I like the rationale there. I'm assuming that's what your brother serves, is it, in his restaurant?
So he has one draft tap, which is our Helles Lager. Oh, okay. And then they have one can line on the menu, which is the New England Pale.
Right. Okay. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Going back to influences, like your favorite brewery, can you name one?
That's even harder than the beer, I think. Can you ask? Can any craft beer fan, enthusiast, customer, narrow it down to one brewery?
Well, Jamie always talks about the moment when you first got into craft beer, when you saw somebody or something.
What's your gateway?
What kind of started you off? Maybe is a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, well, that is a good question. I mentioned earlier the guy that I used to work with. I do remember one night in one of the bars in Belfast, sitting down and having a tasting flight of 5 different beers, all made on the island of Ireland. And there was a Galway Bay Imperial Stout. And this is somebody who, me at the time, was aware of Guinness, was aware of the macro lagers, but really didn't have a clue and hadn't tried any craft beer. So an Imperial Stout, barrel-aged, it just blew my mind. It was just, I don't even know, I would like to put myself back there. I don't even know if I enjoyed it or liked it. It was just, this is so different than anything I've ever tried.
Yeah.
It's just opened my eyes.
That
was definitely, I don't know if that's the gateway beer. I think there was probably more time spent in London drinking beers by the Colonel and particularly them, to be fair. I think that probably the simplicity of their branding as well.
Yeah.
And the, I think, what's the word I'm looking for? Because those guys are timeless. I think the simplicity of their branding is...
They do. They always... You mentioned two brews that always get mentioned. You mentioned Colonel right there, and you mentioned Tim Taylor earlier, and they always come up every time.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I think it's that. The commitment to staying true to yourself and just having unwavering confidence in that. We don't need...
When everyone else is doing something totally different, they're staying... Yeah. No, I'm staying bottles... No, I'm going to keep my brown simple labels. And the beer backs it up as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it's to be admired. And I would say, back to the favourite brewery question, I'll mention Bullhouse Brewing Company in Northern Ireland as a local brewery, because Willie and the team there have been absolute pioneers in terms of pushing and lobbying for the licensing laws in this country to be changed. And what they've done in terms of the beer that they've brewed and bought in the market, and now with Bullhouse East, their bar, and the space that they've created, it's definitely building and the tide is turning and you can feel it. And those guys have been at the forefront of that. So again, anytime I'm talking about a favorite brewery, yes, the first and fundamental that will always be ticked is the beer is absolute quality, consistent, delicious across a range of styles. But then it's back into that, well, it's more than that. Those guys are pioneers for the industry, for the community around them. They're doing so much hard work for that and producing the beer at the same time. And so, yeah, those guys would definitely get a mention as well. And probably Cloudwater in the same vein. I remember back in the early days, just their willingness to put their head above the parapet and talk openly. Those guys were always really thoughtful and purposeful about what they were doing. And that was always something that I admired. Again, the beer was fantastic. But again, it's sort of back to that wider picture and how you can relate to the brand. So they were always a brewery that I looked up to long before I even thought about getting into this commercially.
I don't think that you've mentioned three breweries there that sound like they've got a level of integrity. I mean, even now, Cloudwater, even though they've expanded massively, have still got that sense of purpose about them, and quite clearly Kernel have. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Right, this one, next one's a one-word answer. I'm going to keep you short. Thirds, halves, two-thirds, or pints?
Two-thirds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, this one, favourite style of beer. So, obviously, you've given us a eulogy to the hazy pale. What else sort of gets you excited?
Pilsner.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Good.
Yeah.
It's the humble pale ale of the Pilsner. Lots of other beers get lots of other airtime and are delicious in their own right. And I drink a really broad range of styles, but ultimately I think it's that, the simplicity. I keep coming back to that. What you can drink happily, a pint, another pint. Any day of the week. It doesn't
two-thirds, as you said.
Two-thirds.
I find myself drinking two-thirds. Like in Northern Ireland, 95% of the bars are half or pint.
Right.
If that's the choice, it's usually a can from the fridge, because that says a lot about what their beer offering is. Places that actually do offer the two-thirds and third, I feel like I'm 90% of the time I'll be with the two girls now. I have two kids, seven and four, so we'll have gone out for a bite to eat on Sunday and we'll be having a drink, and you know, you've got a time frame, so two-thirds always feels like no matter what happens I can get to the bottom of that before you have to rush out of here. Thanks to the fan.
That's a good answer. And obviously you mentioned that, you know, you like these kind of sessionable beers. I mean, who wouldn't, you know? And then the final one, and this could be a long answer. I'll let you have a long answer on this one. Favorite hop?
I think at the minute, what I'm finding myself drawn towards is the New Zealand hops, and particularly Motueka. I've used it in many's a beer now, and many's a beer that I'm really, really happy with. I just think the US and Aussie hops, the big hitters, the punchy, really super flavorful hops get a lot of airtime, and rightly so. I think Motueka particularly is just a little softer, a little more subtle, and it works great on its own as the shining star, but also it's a great supporting hop as well for me. It doesn't step all over the toes of whatever other hop that you're trying to put at the forefront of the beer. I think it just segues in there and supports and doesn't try and overtake too much. So I found it to be versatile, but equally it's absolutely class on its own as well. It's just full of flavor, but slightly softer and, as I said, more subtle. It's just one that I keep coming back to.
It's another vote for a Southern Hemisphere hop, but I'm just so glad it's not Nelson, because these guys love Nelson. They're getting a lot of love, so I'm glad that that's the case.
Cool. Okay, so I think we're drawing to a close now, and just like to say thank you so much for your time on this one. Really, really interesting hearing about the beer scene in Northern Ireland and all the kind of challenges you've got, but also some interesting kind of insights into the hops you're using and everything. Is there anything else you'd like to kind of tell us about before we finish up?
I don't think so. Look, thanks for having me. Any of your listeners are looking for the beer, obviously we've launched with Bruiser. We're there. If you want to check us out, we've got our own web shop. If you want to drop in and check out a few cans, we're also actually running a selection box for Christmas. It's a lot of people probably have made their minds up by now, but it's a box with 12 unique beers with four local snacks and a nice little nod to the old school roses or milk tray sort of menu, if you like. So with all of the beers that are in there and some tasting notes to read through, just something that looks and feels nice and also adds a little bit extra. So yeah, just to tell people, I guess, where you can check us out and read a little bit more about us on our website if you want. And yeah, that's pretty much everything for
me. And you're active across social media. Was it on all the platforms?
Yeah, all the platforms, I think, primarily Instagram, but also Facebook, Twitter. We seem to have the biggest sort of audience on Instagram, and that tends to be where you'll find us. And if you want to contact, it's either chris@modestbeer.co.uk or send a message on Instagram. That's the best place to get a quick response anyway.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thanks once again to Chris from Modest Brew. That was a great insight into what it's like to be a brewery in Northern Ireland at the moment. Also, some great hop talk, which is always good. So, if you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe in all the usual podcast places, or check us out on Twitter or Instagram at Belper Beer Club, or our website, belperbeer.club. So until next time, see you later.